Hey everyone, ready to dive into how learning itself is changing? I mean, with tech evolving so fast, it's a lot to keep up with, right?
Yeah, it really is.
Luckily, we've got Chapter 4 of Learner Tasks to guide us. It really gets into this whole shift away from the old way of teaching, you know, like stand and deliver instruction.
Right, like that classic transmission model. It's basically been the go-to for centuries. The teacher's the one with all the knowledge, and they just sort of pour it into the students' heads.
Ah, I can picture it now. Rows of students, heads down, taking notes, while the teacher lectures. Been there, done that. But this chapter makes a pretty strong case that this way of doing things just doesn't cut it anymore. So what's changed?
Well, for one, just think about how we access information now. In the past, you had to memorize tons of facts and figures. It was crucial.
Oh, yeah.
But nowadays, you can just Google the capital of France or whatever. You don't need to have it memorized.
True. I use Google for everything.
Right. We've got instant access to so much information on our phones and computers.
Yeah.
So what used to be considered essential skills, well, they're not so essential anymore.
That makes sense. So if computers can basically be our walking encyclopedias and calculators, what does that mean for us humans? Like, what are those skills that WE should be focusing on that a machine can't just replicate?
That's a great question. And it gets to the really exciting part of all this. Because it's not about being replaced by technology. It's about figuring out how to use it strategically.
Yeah.
You know, we can leverage these incredible tools to handle things like data storage or complex calculations, freeing us up to focus on what makes us uniquely human.
Leverage. I love that word. It's like using a lever to lift something heavy. But in this case, we're using tech to lift the burden of rote memorization.
Exactly. It frees up our minds to do some deeper thinking. And speaking of powerful tech, look at your smartphone.
What about it? It's just my phone.
It's just your phone. That tiny device has more computing power than the computers that sent us to the moon.
Wow, when you put it like that.
It's pretty amazing. And we're using it to listen to this right now. So imagine what we could do if we harness that same level of tech for education.
Okay, yeah. Mind officially blown. But you keep mentioning these uniquely human skills. What exactly are we talking about? Can you, like, define those?
So one concept that comes up a lot is tacit knowledge. It's that kind of deep understanding that's hard to explain.
Oh.
You know, it's tough to put into words, let alone program into a computer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's more about knowing which question to ask, not just knowing the answer, or recognizing the ethics of a situation, making those judgment calls based on experience and context. Really, it's about wisdom.
Oh, right. Like that DIKW model.
Yeah.
Data, information, knowledge, wisdom. I remember learning about that.
Yeah, exactly.
A computer can give you data, no problem.
Yeah.
But it takes a human to interpret that data, apply knowledge, and actually make a wise decision.
Exactly. You got it. And the source even lays out these 8 key pillars of wisdom.
Really?
One that I think is super relevant for you is dealing with uncertainty.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, think about it. The world is full of unknowns. And being comfortable navigating those unknowns, being okay with not having all the answers right away, that's a huge advantage.
Yeah.
Especially in today's world.
That definitely resonates with me. So much of learning, especially now, is about being adaptable, right?
Yeah.
About being okay with not knowing everything. But okay. Let's say we all agree that these nuanced human skills are key for success in the 21st century. How do we actually teach them? It seems like a pretty big change from the whole fill your head with facts approach.
Yeah, it is a different approach for sure. We're seeing a shift from what's called a positivist to a naturalistic view of education.
Okay, so what's the difference?
Imagine you're baking. A positivist approach would be like following a recipe to the letter, you know, step by step. There's one right way to do it, and you get a predictable outcome.
I see.
But a naturalistic approach is more like experimenting, using what's fresh at the market, tossing in a pinch of this or that.
So positivist is all about finding the right answer, but naturalistic is about embracing the messiness of things.
Exactly. Because real world problems rarely have one clear solution.
Right.
And that actually leads into this idea of the professional recognition heuristic.
Okay. What is that?
It basically says that a good learning task should feel like something you'd actually do in a real job. So if you're learning about, say, marketing, the task should resemble something a marketing professional would do.
So you're learning skills that are actually valued out in the real world.
Right. Not just theoretical stuff you'll never use.
I get it. It's like the difference between reading a textbook definition of leadership and actually leading a team project.
That's a great analogy. One's theoretical, the other's experiential. And I think we all know you learn a lot more by actually doing something, even if you make mistakes along the way.
Absolutely. So this is all pointing to what the chapter calls deeper, active, and authentic learning environments, right?
Exactly. It's where learning is rooted in real-world problems. And the focus isn't on just getting the right answer, but on actually being competent. It's about creating a dynamic learning community where everyone is contributing and learning from each other.
This sounds amazing, but I'm a very visual person. I need to like see it to get it. So can you paint me a picture? What would one of these deeper learning experiences actually look like?
Okay, imagine a classroom where you have a real say in what you're learning and how you're learning it.
I like that.
Take project-based learning, for example.
Okay.
The source mentions this middle school student who, through a PBL project, discovered a passion for metalworking, ended up creating these incredible sculptures under the guidance of a professional welder.
Wow. So it's about tapping into students' interests and letting them pursue their own learning paths, even if those paths lead outside of the classroom. That's so cool.
It is. And that sense of ownership, that feeling of this matters to me, can be so powerful for students. It transforms them from passive recipients of information into active creators of knowledge.
I can see how that would make learning more engaging, for sure. But what about those of us who learn best by seeing things in action? How do we bring this idea of deeper learning to life visually?
Well, think about video.
Okay.
It's not just about watching lectures anymore. Video can immerse you in real-world contexts. You can see how experts actually approach problems. You even get insights into that tacit knowledge we were talking about earlier.
Right. It's like the difference between reading a recipe and watching a cooking show. The show brings it to life, you know? You see the techniques and all those little tips and tricks that the recipe might miss.
Precisely. And that's where models like upside-down classrooms come in.
Upside-down classrooms?
It's not just about watching the lecture at home and doing homework in class. It's about using video to provide a richer learning experience, one that's rooted in real-world contexts. Then, class time is used for deeper discussions, analysis, hands-on application.
Got it. So instead of passively listening to a lecture, students could be gathering data online or analyzing speeches or even doing virtual experiments. And then they come to class ready for a real discussion with their peers. And the teacher acts more like a facilitator.
Exactly. It's about shifting from passive absorption to active creation, from individual learning to collaborative exploration.
I like it. Sounds pretty exciting.
It is.
But what about assessment? I mean, if we're moving away from traditional tests and grades, how do we measure understanding and skills in these more dynamic learning environments?
That's where portfolios can be incredibly valuable.
Portfolios.
It's like a curated collection of your work that shows your whole learning journey, not just your test scores.
So it's more than just grades.
Way more. It reflects how the student learned, how they applied their knowledge in real settings.
So it's a win-win for learners and educators.
Exactly.
It sounds like portfolios could even be helpful outside of school, like showing your skills to potential employers or college admissions officers.
Absolutely. It's like a dynamic resume. You're not just listing what you know, but how you've actually used it.
I love it. Okay, but what about those standardized tests? They're still a big part of education, right?
They are.
And speaking of which, where does all this tech we've been talking about fit in with testing?
Well, tech can actually make testing more, well, efficient and effective.
How so?
Think about it. Computers can grade tests instantly, so you get feedback right away.
Makes sense.
And they can randomize questions and answers. Helps reduce cheating.
Good point.
Plus, a lot of professional licensing exams are moving online, so students need experience with that format anyway.
That's true. It's about prepping them for the real world, not just for a test in class.
Yep.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about tech. But what about the teachers themselves? What's their role in all of this, you know, in these deeper learning environments?
It's definitely a different role than that traditional sage on the stage model. It's less about lecturing and more about facilitating, guiding, coaching.
Kind of like a cognitive apprenticeship manager. I think that's how the source puts it. Someone who helps students make connections, provides support when they need it, and even recognizes the expertise that students themselves bring to the table.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that everyone in the classroom has something to offer, that learning is a two-way street.
A collaborative process.
Yeah, right.
And I imagine that's where guided participation comes in, building on what students already know and gradually leading them to a deeper understanding.
Spot on. Guided participation is all about creating that safe space for students to take risks, make mistakes, learn by doing.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground. As we wrap up our deep dive into learner tasks, what are your biggest takeaways? What's really sticking with you?
I think for me, it's that shift from a knowledge transmission model of education to a knowledge creation model. It's not about memorizing facts anymore. It's about actively creating understanding. And for someone like you, always looking to learn and grow, that's a game changer.
I agree. It's about equipping students to be lifelong learners, giving them the tools they need to thrive in this crazy world. And it's not just about students either. It's about all of us, right? Embracing that mindset of always learning and growing.
Exactly. So as you continue on your learning journey, what are you most curious about? What skills and knowledge do you need to really make a difference?
Those are good questions. This conversation has definitely gotten me thinking, and I bet it's done the same for you listening out there. So as you go on your own learning adventures, remember, the world is full of possibilities, and the best tool you have is your own curiosity.
Never stop exploring. Never stop questioning.
And never stop learning. It really feels like we've been given a whole new toolkit for learning. But like any tool, they're only as good as the person using them.
That's where the magic happens. It's not about being perfect. It's about experimenting, making mistakes, and constantly trying to improve.
And isn't that what makes learning so exciting? It's a journey, right? We're always pushing our boundaries and embracing the unknown. But speaking of comfort zones, I gotta admit, some of this new educational landscape can be intimidating. It's a big shift from how a lot of us were taught.
Change can be tough, but look at it as an opportunity to learn and grow. And remember, you don't have to do it alone.
That's so important. We talked about community, collaboration, tapping into the knowledge of others. So if you're feeling overwhelmed, reach out. Connect with other learners. Find mentors.
And don't be afraid to ask questions.
Yeah.
Curiosity is what drives learning. So yeah. Be bold, be curious, and don't give up.
Well said. This has been such a fascinating look at how learner tasks are changing. We've talked about the limits of traditional education, the amazing potential of technology, and why those uniquely human skills are so important, like dealing with uncertainty, embracing those messy real-world problems.
It's been quite a journey. And the big takeaway for me is this. The future of learning is about empowering people to be adaptable, creative, and engaged learners so they can thrive in this complex world we live in.
I love that. So, as you continue on your learning journey, remember to embrace technology, connect with others, and approach every challenge with curiosity and that willingness to learn. Keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep learning. And most importantly, don't be afraid to really dig deep into the things that fascinate you. Thanks for joining us. It really feels like we've been handed this whole new set of tools for learning. But like any tool, it's only as good as the person using it, right?
Yeah, that's so true. That's where the real magic happens.
Mm.
It's not about being perfect or knowing everything. It's about being willing to try things out, to experiment.
And to make mistakes.
Oh, definitely. Make all the mistakes. And then you learn from them and keep getting better.
And isn't that kind of what makes learning so exciting? It's like it's a journey, right? You're constantly pushing yourself, going outside of your comfort zone. But speaking of comfort zones, I have to admit, some of this stuff can feel a little intimidating. It's a pretty big shift from how a lot of us learned back in the day.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Change can be hard. But think of it as an opportunity, a chance to really expand what you think learning can be.
Right.
And remember, you don't have to do it alone.
That's so true. We've been talking about community, collaboration, and how important it is to connect with others, to leverage each other's expertise. So if you're feeling lost or overwhelmed, reach out. Find those fellow learners. Find those mentors who can help guide you.
Exactly. And don't be afraid to ask questions. I mean, that's how we learn, right? Curiosity is the engine of learning. So be bold, be curious, and most importantly, don't give up.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Well, this has been an incredibly insightful deep dive into this whole world of learner tasks. We talked about how traditional education has its limits, the power of technology, and why it's so important to cultivate those uniquely human skills.
You know, like being comfortable with uncertainty, being able to tackle those messy real world problems.
Exactly.
It's been quite a journey. And for me, the biggest takeaway is this. The future of learning is about empowering each and every person to be adaptable, to be creative, to be engaged learners who can thrive in this crazy, complex world we live in, and of course, beyond.
Beautifully said. So as you continue on your learning journeys, remember to embrace technology, connect with others, and approach every challenge with curiosity and that willingness to grow. Keep exploring, keep questioning, and most importantly, keep learning. And don't be afraid to really dig deep into the things that light you up. Thanks for joining us.